everyone. I'm Anam.
And I'm Ksenia. And welcome to This Wasn't in the Manual.
We're two friends and ex-colleagues who worked at the same company for over a decade.
But came from totally different worlds. I'm from Russia and moved to Dubai just recently.
And I'm from Pakistan and I grew up in Dubai. Like most people, a lot of our day-to-day challenges and professional experiences where we've been through were never really taught to us.
Yeah, that's true. Life never comes with a manual.
So we started this podcast to have conversations we wish we had earlier. And Helen Peterson called us the burnout generation, and frankly, it makes sense. We were raised to believe that if we worked just hard enough, things would fall into place. So in today's episode, we're sitting down with Jessica, also known as the Kindness Catalog, to talk about burnout, self-kindness, and all things we wish were in the manual. So let's get into it.
Yeah, so I mean, before we get into it, I've known Jessica for the entirety of my media career, and I think we've had lots of changes in our careers, and we've seen a lot of different phases in our lives as well.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited for us to dive into it.
Me too.
I'll let Ksenia start.
Okay. Jessica, first of all, thank you for coming to our podcast. And I think let's start from the beginning. Can you take us back to the days when you worked at InMobi? And specifically, I'm interested, how did your life and success look for you back then?
Oh, God. Like, life back then was shiny. Let's say that. So shiny in terms of I was winning awards for myself, for clients, for the company, high six-figure salary, a lot of commission, promotions regularly, like every couple of years, responsibility. I was leading basically the Dubai office in the Middle East team. But under that, I was just exhausted. Like, get to the weekend and not want to see anyone, you know, or in the middle of the day, I'd be running off to the toilets and just to sit in the cubicle to get 10 minutes to myself, you know. And I put on a facade, if you like. Like, nobody knew that I was so unhappy because, I mean, Anam, you would probably, that was not the word that you would use to describe me back then, right?
Unhappy. No,
right? I was this smiley mask. I was just being who I was expected to be and the pressure that I'd put on myself to be. So, yeah. And I think on top of that, I was measuring my value based on my targets and how many unread emails I had. And even when I was doing that right, it was something was missing. Something didn't feel quite right.
Interesting. But I bet it didn't happen at the beginning. How long did you work there and when did you start feeling this additional pressure?
It's funny, right? Because we think, oh, let's just get the next promotion and then, you know, then things
It'll
will be
fine.
Better.
Yes. I've had that. Oh. Yeah. I remember aiming to become a manager and then I'll be okay.
Yeah.
And then you keep stepping up and it's never enough.
Yeah. The pressure just continues. It's the responsibility with that next level, with the next salary bracket is just there and it just keeps growing. So I would say it was there in the early days because of different reasons. In the early days, the pressure was there because I had this perfectionism that I was dealing with and I wanted to be a certain way. And then the more I grew, it was more external pressure. It was it was, you know, from my boss, from my clients, from global teams. And so, yeah, it wasn't in the beginning, but it definitely got worse as I got more senior.
You know, as you're talking about this, I remember so you meet a lot of people in media and everyone is constantly rushing we're in an emergency room. And Jess would come, and I remember saying this to Jess as well, and Jess would come, she's always smiley, she's always calm and very composed, and you would not realize that there's a storm brewing, never imagined. And I'm like, Jess, you know, I cannot imagine you being angry at anybody. She's like, no, but I
remember
am.
You saying
I, and she's sitting there, she's like, no, I was so angry, and she's smiling, and I'm like,
what? I'm like, just talking about
like,
road
no,
rage.
I was so I was filled with rage, and I'm like, Jess, if you're gonna scream at me, I'll be like, okay, like, you know, I'm sorry, you're so cute, let me hug you. Like, she's such a sweetheart. That's like, you maintained your composure at all times. Like, till date, I cannot imagine you, like, honestly, screaming is, like, not even the word, or just, like, losing it on anybody.
Yeah, like, this is a thing.
Because you were, like, losing it inside. Yeah.
Now, exactly, you got it, because it was, like, I maintain my cool with everybody else, and I put so much pressure on myself to be a certain way and to be perceived a certain way, to maintain this image and this reputation that I built that I thought was so important, that on the inside I was just, burnt out, like, every opportunity.
True. Yeah. Makes sense. What did you think was... So we have a few more questions around, like, the whole burnout and your journey. But if you had to describe, like, one moment or, like, the early sign of what a burn, where you realized you were burning out, just like a, like, you know, in a short way, because we're going to get more into this.
Yeah.
So just, like, what was your first sign of saying, wait, something's wrong?
I would say... I mean, I'm like giggling because I'm like, oh my God, there were so many times, right? Mm-hmm. But I think I have this one day. So I was in an hour long meeting, one of those meetings that should have been an email. You know,
we know those.
You know those, right? So got out of this meeting, got back to my desk, opened Teams, and it was... my colleague had said something, something urgent. And I just sat back and I was like, this was a normal situation for me, by the way. This was happening daily, and you guys can vouch. Like, I'm sure anyone in the corporate world can understand the unnecessary use of urgent drives me mad. But yeah, regular occurrence. So I could have easily in that moment just been like, yeah, okay, sick, like, let me do it this way, like, this is how I do it. It's very robotic, right? You know what to do. But in that moment, I just sat back and I was like, I'm a commercial director now. You know, I've been working for 13 years and this is where I am. This is how I feel. Even when I did all of that stuff right, there was still this, like, underlying unease or this pressure or this stress that I just couldn't get rid of. And so that was a moment where I was just like, I think something's got to change. Yeah, I was like, I think I need to explore other options here.
That makes sense. It reminds me of, like, when you said urgent, it's so interesting. When you said that, I remembered, like, I had someone I was working with, they would send me an urgent email. And then after 2 hours, they'd be like, urgent, urgent. And then after, like, 3 hours, it'd be like, urgent, urgent, urgent. I'm like, okay, so I need to pick the third one? Like, all right, cool.
Oh, stop. And then it became non-urgent anymore.
100%. And you send it to them and no response. Cricket.
Yes.
It's so funny. I thought it was urgent, urgent, urgent. Like, it apparently wasn't.
That's so funny.
It's so funny, yeah. That's okay. That's really interesting. And I feel like what you felt is what a lot of people feel on their day to day, but they don't know that what's happening.
Yeah.
They just, lack of sleep, or I had too much coffee, let me just move on, you know, like, move on to the next day. I was telling Sunny about this. I was looking at this concept that's adopted in South Korea. It's called Prison Inside Me, where people go and imprison themselves. And it's like no phones, no clocks, just silence. They get a book. I feel like it's quite wild that people need to simulate a prison to get away from this like hustle culture and burnout. Have you ever felt that feeling where you wanted to, like, completely disconnect? Where you needed to lock everything out and just be yourself?
Yeah, 100%. So I go back to the toilet scenario. That was right? It's like, true. Every day I'd be taking 10 minutes out here or there just to go and get some peace and get some time to myself and just be with myself. But I also went to Nepal. And so basically over the 13 years I dealt with, like, a lot of different things, like all of us do as we get older. It's like, you know, maybe you go through anxiety or you go through burnout or whatever, and you figure out your way, right? And you just, you keep going. So for me, I always had this desire to like understand humans and the way that we work. And obviously, me being human, I was like, I was like, what can I do to explore like personal development at a deeper level? So started looking online, and obviously the Buddhist culture came up, and I was like, this is such a simple way of living, and these people are so happy. Like, these guys have got something. They've figured it out. And so I found this monastery in Nepal, and I went and I spent a few weeks there. And we became full-blown vegetarians. We gave all digital devices in.
I had no idea you did that.
Yes.
That's crazy.
Koh Phang Monastery, just in case anyone ever wants to check it out. But it was unbelievable.
Was it a silent retreat?
Part of it was silent. So we would get up at 3 a.m. We'd go in silence and do our lectures. We'd learn about the Buddhist way of life.
Okay.
And then we would get together in a group, discuss it, and then, spend, like, the second half of the day meditating and being in silence. It was incredible.
That's interesting. That reminds me of the same one that I was mentioning to you. There's another one that is done by an artist. Mm-hmm. It's called The Cleaning House, where it's a little more extreme, where they fast. No phones, nothing, no books. You can't have anything.
Yeah.
They have rituals where they are, you know, in a blindfold, or they're sitting outside in a blindfold and stimulating themselves.
Yes.
So that's so interesting, Jess. I had no idea that you did that. That's very cool.
You know, the interesting thing about that step further. So now you mention it, I look back to the time that I was in Nepal, and if anybody ever asked me like what it was like, I say it was like looking in a mirror. Honestly, and that just takes it a level further. So the silence, the blindfolding yourself, you are left with no choice but to listen to the voice in your head.
Yeah.
And so many times, like, I realize, wow, I'm so nasty to myself, you know, or I say it by your back. I'm so mean to myself, but it's good because it built awareness, and it all starts with awareness.
That's great. So did you do that while you were working?
Yes.
Okay, so do you think that was your would you say that was your turning point to walk away from corporate?
No, that was like 8 years ago. Oh. Yeah, I did. Yeah, so.
Oh, no wonder she was so calm when she was to meet us. Exactly. She's like, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's all the meditation.
How much time did you spend there? Because I cannot imagine myself. I'm going to take
you. I was just thinking you and I should go.
Well, I think the shortest retreat they do is like 10 days. I think I spent.
That's a shortest?
Just over a couple of weeks there.
But it makes sense to get.
There is
like
a silent retreat as well for like 8 days. You don't speak. Mm. Like
I will don't speak.
No, you don't speak.
Oh my god! It means that you keep speaking to yourself.
Yeah, I don't know where it is. Yeah, so it's like a blow up in my head. Like I can't imagine.
No, the benefits. I would say do it, and if you do it, let me know, because I mean that it sounds scary, but the outcome of it is so incredible.
It does. You know how they say even like 5 to 10 minutes of meditation has such a huge impact on your brain chemistry? So I can imagine how much this must influence your like well-being in general.
100%.
Okay, so the interesting one. How did people around you react when you made the shift? Were they supported? Were they confused?
Yes.
And sorry to interrupt. When did it happen?
When did it happen?
When did it happen? Okay, so over those 13 years, so I did the monastery. I would, on every vacation, I'd try and find something, you know, to stimulate myself, learn about myself. I went to Australia. I did a seminar with Tony Robbins.
Did you do that one? Yes. Oh my God, I really wanted to.
Incredible.
Okay, cool. Yes. I wanted to check it out. Yeah,
it is totally worth it. Like everything that I invested in, health or mental health wise, has been worth it because you come away just knowing a bit more about yourself.
Yeah.
But for me, so it was that moment when after the hour-long meeting, after the urgent message, I just sat back and I was like, something needs to change, but I don't know what. So I had had, over these years, I've had 3 different therapists, 2 different life coaches, not all at the same time, obviously,
fair.
Right?
No, that's
fair. But again, like, I love understanding myself. This is something that I enjoy doing. So, you know, I go through something in the early part of my career. I had a few panic attacks. So I went, I found a therapist, and I figured out how to cope with that. Another point in my life, I was figuring out some of my other, like, limiting beliefs about myself. I went and found another therapist. So, mm-hmm. you know, I did all of these things and I was like, yeah, this is great. Like, I know basic techniques of how to handle situations or my mental health, but let me take it one step further. Let me go and study this.
Yeah.
So obviously being a big fan of Tony Robbins, you know, mm-hmm. I went to his seminar, so looked into his courses, signed up for one of his courses, purely with the intention of helping myself,
okay.
right?
Yeah.
And then at the end of it, my transformation was so profound on so many levels, from just healing that inner child yeah. to understanding what lit me up, understanding what was holding me back, like all of these different things. And I said, you know what? This is too valuable to keep to myself. I yeah. can take this and I can create my own amplified version mm-hmm. of it with kindness at the heart. And I'll tell
that.
You how I got to that.
Yeah, because I know the kindness, I've seen the Kindness Project before as well. I know you started it while you were, but we'll get into that yeah. as well. I feel like, did you ever go to any of the Joe Dispenza seminars?
I didn't, but I've taken some of his
courses
online.
As well. Okay, yeah. Interesting. No, Tony Robbins as well. I've heard a lot about his seminars and how life-changing they are.
Yeah.
Do you feel like when you came back, you tried to implement that? Because you were in a leadership role for a while.
Yeah.
Did you try to implement those in your team, create a culture?
Yes.
Do you think that was also like useful? I can imagine, like, even if you don't like completely quit or your yeah. professional career or like corporate career, I feel like you still find ways to like embody it.
Yes,
100%. So did you think that helped you so you didn't have to have that panic attack? Or
yes, like I'd got to a point in my career where I was managing, you know, I was actually not managing, I was thriving. So
yeah, you
know,
were
yeah, like, you know, no panic attacks, the anxiety was at bay, other than just feeling something was
yeah.
missing. So yeah, definitely, like, everything I learned through the seminars or going to Nepal and all these things, like, they taught me to embody just like a simple way of life
mm-hmm.
and to love myself, if
yeah.
you like. So, yeah, I mean, you'd have to ask my team, but I'd like to think, and the feedback that I got throughout being a manager or being a leader was that I was very empathetic.
Yeah.
And that's something that I pride myself on. And it's not necessarily, when you think of a strong leader, you don't think of empathy first.
No.
You know? It is like probably the last thing on the list. And actually, in the beginning of my career, that was one thing that held me back, because
mm-hmm.
I'm a massive empath,
yeah.
but I was too afraid to show it. But in the end, when I left, when I look back, I'm like, ah, oh, that's what made me such a good leader.
Absolutely. I have no doubt, because I feel like you embodied that as a person as well.
Thank
you. What was the reaction of people around you when you made the shift?
This is a funny one, because let's say messages on LinkedIn
mm-hmm.
went from congrats on the award or congrats on the promotion to
yeah.
are you okay? They're like, literally.
Yeah, yeah.
When I started coming forward and
yeah.
revealing, like, I've dealt with panic attacks, I've dealt with anxiety,
mm-hmm.
I hate public speaking, or
mm-hmm.
I hated public speaking, all these things. As a person, to put your baggage on the table like that for your entire professional network to see,
mm-hmm.
it is quite...
It's daunting.
Yeah, right? It is. And so, but it was part of my journey to becoming the person that I want to be, this authentic self that says, you know what? I've dealt with that. I'm dealing with other things right now, and this is who I am. Like, take me or leave me. I know that I can add value as a coach, as a friend, and that's just who I am. So the back to the question. The messages were initially concerning,
mm-hmm.
and then it was relieving for me. Mm-hmm. It was so relieving, because I'm like, oh, is this it? Like, people know I have a panic attack. They ask me if I'm okay now, and that's it. Like, they just forget about it. It's nothing for them, because
yeah.
everyone's mm-hmm. going through their own journeys. But
absolutely.
I think, in terms of support, so whenever we do anything in life, mm-hmm. we have these unconscious expectations of the people around us, the people that we love, the people that we call friends and our, you know, professional networks that have showed up for us at different times when we could benefit them. Mm-hmm. So initially, people that have worked with me were like, this is amazing. You know, knowing you, working with you, you're going to smash this. Like, great job. But then after that initial buzz died down, silence, right?
Then you're by yourself.
By yourself. And that was very much a oh crap moment.
I have a question. When you decided to leave, did you already know what you were going to do?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I'd planned for it. Not to the extent of like the business model that I've built today mm-hmm. and where I'm going with it, but I had an idea. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I followed the kind of catalog way before because yes. I thought it was like a nice motivational page.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And then it developed okay. into the yeah. dancing videos that yeah, you saw today.
Yeah, they're so fun. To be honest, I feel like what a fitting, I don't know, what would you call it, service, product, or like inspiration. It's fitting to you as a person, yeah. and it just makes sense to me to see that.
Yay,
yeah,
that is the best feedback. Okay, because you know, like if we look at support, so different people showed up in different ways, mm-hmm. and like Anam, you've been one of them,
oh,
right?
Mm-hmm.
No, and you know, even on social media, like as an individual, when you post things, like some people might take that type of thing personally. I personally didn't back mm-hmm. then. When it's a business, initially, that's like every like counts, you
yeah.
know? And it's the almost an indication of the success. It's an indication of how you're getting your message across, like
absolutely.
What you're trying to deliver and how well you're doing that and how well it's being perceived and how well it's landing. And so initially I dealt with that over a couple of weeks, like, okay, just a reminder, like this isn't personal. This
yeah.
is an indication of what's working and what isn't.
Mm-hmm.
This is analytics.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? And
yeah.
so, yeah, so that was... I think it just also remade me like question, why did I give up my job? I gave up my job to not get the applause, to not win the awards. I gave up my job to live a life that was fulfilling.
Right.
And what was that? That was learning, creating, and helping people.
Yeah.
And so when I felt that initial like, what if people don't support me? Or what if my friends aren't liking my post?
Mm-hmm.
I just sat down with myself and I said, am I living a fulfilling life? And the answer was yes. And that anxiety just went away. I was like, I'm living it. I'm happy regardless.
I love this point because Senia and I were discussing that yesterday. So I think, Senia,
yeah.
that's a question we'll ask ourselves when we are stressing about the numbers.
Yes.
Are we living a fulfilling life? Because I feel like success cannot be measured or success or happiness cannot be measured in, like, I guess, numbers,
yes.
I suppose. As long as, I think the discussion we were having was, as long as we are enjoying what we're doing, putting out the most authentic work.
Yes.
And just meeting good people, then I think that should be enough.
Then that is enough, right?
Yeah.
And always pull yourself back to why. Why did we start this?
Yeah.
In anything that you do. And... like for me, creating, you know, I love creating.
Yeah.
It was about being creative, being innovative, being
yeah.
able to show up as myself and explore all these new skills and develop
absolutely.
Them, right? So for you guys too, might be the same or it might be something different, but
mm-hmm.
find it and anchor.
Yeah,
in.
And I think the cool thing about Senia and I is that when I'm like losing my head, she's calming me down. When she's
yes.
freaking out, I'm calming her down.
Mm,
so I think
yes.
that's why it's really exciting.
So
well. Yeah,
yeah,
a really exciting space.
Just
one, sorry, go on.
Yeah, Jessica, sorry, I will change your vibe a little bit. Because
yeah.
like I love what you're doing right now, and to be honest, I have a lot of questions about this, but I bet like Right now, a lot of people are going through the same, but they might be scared to change their life because, for example, we all live in Dubai, and of course, most of the people, they live on working visa. Mm-hmm. So if you leave your job, you need to have a plan B. Yeah. So how did it happen to you from the practical standpoint? I mean, did you have some savings? That's why you managed to change your career, not career, your life, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or I don't know, like, did you have a plan B? How did it work out for you?
Yeah. Okay, so... we're all living in a world where we pride ourselves consciously or unconsciously of being busy, right? We fill up our calendars to the max and our bosses do it to us and their bosses do it to them. And so that gives not a lot of time to exploring what another life looks like. That's why I think so many people feel stuck, if you like, because by the time it gets to the evening or the weekend, they just want to let loose. They just want to feel some sort of peace to recover from the week, and then they go again. So I think advice for, you know, people that are stuck but wanting a change is creating a little bit of headspace, you know, even if that's 10 minutes a day, 30 minutes a day, to just sitting down and being like, okay, what am I good at? What, I mean, for me, it was the kindness catalog, or, you know, I could have very easily become a chef, you know? When I was exploring options, I was like, you know, you've got to ask yourself, how do I want to spend my time?
Yeah.
So for me, it was, I want to continue to learn. I want to create, be creative in any sense, not just on social media, and I want to help people. So, you know, chef, you know, help people fulfill their need to eat, or a teacher, you know, I had so many different options. It didn't just need to be a coach or creating the kindness catalog, but to create that runway after you've got the clarity on how you want to spend your time. Creating a runway for that is, like you said, especially in Dubai, but I think in, you know what, in any country, because to leave something that's so comfortable for the unknown, we need to have a plan.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I saved, I gave myself a year runway in terms of finances, and that was probably, if I look at how I was spending back then, I, you know, that's probably last
I think
that would last me like 6 months.
Yeah.
So I had to analyze my expenses and be like, where am I willing to cut back? How much of a drop in salary am I willing to accept? I agreed with myself that I would be willing to earn 25% of what I was earning.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, to be happy.
I wouldn't accept this.
Yeah. I feel like I need 50 just to cover my expenses.
Well, yeah, but then you really offset that with your happiness.
Okay.
How much does happiness cost? If you knew that you were earning 25% of your salary, but you woke up jumping out of bed, you didn't want to go to sleep because you were just so fulfilled and happy and excited about what you were doing. You didn't even need to spend anything to be happy. You know, like we spend, we buy on Amazon, or we get that chocolate, or we do this or the other to feel good, but you don't need to do that anymore because you're living in a way. But, you know, the funny thing about that is within 3 months, I'm already earning 100%
of what I was earning. That's fantastic.
That is what happens when you live in alignment. Honestly, that is...
It's like one step back, one step forward again. No, actually one step back, two steps forward.
Yes, right? Because imagine where I will be like a year from now. And I was speaking to another friend who's also an entrepreneur, ex-media too. Maybe he can be your next guest. But he said, like, you know, he's 10x'd his income. And I'm not saying to everyone, hey, the answer is go and leave your job.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
No way.
Too romanticized right now as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't look like that for everyone. But it can look like... It can look like just creating more time for what you love, whether that be on the weekend or taking a couple of days off to go skiing in the Mall of Emirates or, you know, whatever it is, creating more time for what you love.
I like that Senya does these things, actually. She spends a lot of time and experiences. Yeah, like the sports you play. I think
But I really liked what Jessica said, that sometimes you need to stop and take a moment just to think about who you are, what you are good at, and what you want from your life. Yes. Because for me, yes, I do a lot of different stuff. Yeah. But to be honest, like, I'm always running, like, from one activity to another activity, from work to my hobbies.
Do you feel like, I'm just going to shift a little this, and I want to ask just on this topic, is this, I know you do a lot of activities where you're wakeboarding or, like, you know, you're playing tennis. It's a bit, like, hyperactive, but when you dive, you can't do anything else. Oh, that's a silent moment.
That's a little bit insane, because when I dive, I keep thinking about my work. Can you imagine?
No. Okay, we need to buy you more diving courses.
Like, I found a hobby where I don't think about work at all. It's dancing. Because I keep thinking about what my next move is.
Literally.
Do you know that's actually a meditation hack as well that my cousin introduced me to. He's like, you know what? If you sit and think about what your next thought's going to be, you're going to hear crickets. What's going to be my next thought? And it's just like silent for a few seconds. That's actually really smart. That's cool.
That's a nice idea.
That is so cool.
It's so difficult to create time to think because, you know, I used to get frustrated with myself for overthinking, overanalyzing. But now, every night before bed, I allow myself 30 minutes. People like to do it on a journal. I like to do it in my head. I have a conversation with myself. Mm. And I just close my eyes and I let my thoughts just freely jump from one thing to the next. And I see where it goes. And honestly, that's where my best ideas come. Mm. They really do.
And you don't write them down?
I do afterwards. Yeah.
Because if I don't write them down, they're gone.
No, I do afterwards for sure. Okay. But that's a nice ritual. But creating headspace, like, and it doesn't need to look like meditation. Mm. I mean, I like meditation too, but asking questions, like having some prompts, like, what makes you feel good? How are you feeling right now? What do you need more of? Just having 2 minutes and asking yourself these questions are so powerful.
Yeah, I think finding your medium is important because everyone will tell you, go to therapy, journal, do this, do that. And I tell people, as someone who's experienced all of that, is that you need to find what works for you. And these are only tools. They're not your end all be all. Yes. You know, you have to do a combination to find what the right combination is for you. Yeah. So for Senia, I was dancing, you know, and a few other things in combination, which is amazing. And for you, it's like thinking and then writing. Yes. So I think it's very important for people and to realize that if I've had people who've gone to therapy for the first session and they're like, it didn't do anything to me. I'm like, that's not how it works. Yeah. That's not how it works.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
Then they go to another session, to the second session, and like, still nothing.
So nothing happened. Now I feel even worse.
And I'm like, I've wasted my money.
And I'm like, you know what? Actually, initially, you're supposed to feel worse because you're like identifying the problem. They're like, no. All right, fine. Do your thing.
It is unique to everyone. Like, I love that you do dancing.
Yeah,
honestly.
Too.
Yeah, just get girls. The body moving. This is the thing about rest as well, right?
Yeah.
Like, rest, people think that rest is like, oh, if you can afford to go on like a, you know, a spa weekend, or if you can afford to go off to the Maldives. And no, that isn't, I mean, yeah, that's rest. That's a lovely type of rest. But equally, like, rest can be going for a walk in between emails. It can be sitting down and watching your favorite show at the end of the day. It can be calling your mom or voice noting your bestie. It can be so many little things, and it's so personal. You have to explore all of them to find your flow.
Whatever makes you feel energized.
You know, I think that now it's a good time to talk about your kindness catalog, because we have mentioned it several times and we still didn't talk what it is exactly. So how can you describe it to your friends who, for example, is burned out?
Okay, so I would describe the kindness catalog as a concept and a platform that is an emotional toolkit for people to thrive in the modern world. And that's by mastering their mind and creating a life that they love by unlocking the most authentic, incredible, weird and wonderful version of themselves. And kindness, I found through my transformation, is at the heart of everything. Kindness to yourself, whether it be addiction, depression, anxiety, burnout, lack of confidence, you name it, like, kindness to yourself is the answer to everything.
Interesting. So you're kind of like giving different pieces of advice how you can manage the stress and whatnot. Can you like give us maybe one example, the most interesting piece of content you created so far?
So piece of content. So I do a lot of different types of content, right? So a lot of it, if you follow me on Instagram, is jumping and dancing around and like, again, this is my
so it wasn't a joke when you asked Jessica to dance at the beginning.
No, it was hot out.
Because I'm like, you know, I love to dance. So I'm like, you know what?
I'm like, why she's not? Like, I'm ready. I did that just now.
You can feature in my content if you want. No, but really, like, yeah, so the content, like, I love it because I took what I learned through my Tony Robbins and Chloe Mandanis course. So Tony is the best life coach in the world, I personally think. Chloe is one of the best therapists and psychologists in the world. I also did an NLP course, so neuro-linguistic programming. And all of their ideas are so unique. So I took the best of their ideas and I created like over 70 different tools and strategies. And there's a lot up and coming with the Kindness Catalog. Like for now, it is socially focused, you know, Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn. But over the next couple of months, we'll be launching the website and there'll be courses. Courses that can help, whether it be figuring out how to get unstuck or overcoming burnout or creating confidence, whatever it may be, it will be there using a few or many of these different tools and strategies that I've created.
Nice. Very cool. I really like NLP, to be honest. I was really into this stuff back at university. So for those who don't know what it is, so basically it's how you can reframe your thoughts, your attitude to different things. For example, there is a construction on your way to the work. And you might think, oh, another construction, I might be late again, blah, blah, blah. Or you might think, oh, in the future, I'm going to get to work quicker than I used to do. So that's how you can reframe. So I was really into this stuff at university. I was trying to reframe everything, but at some point I decided to give up. Enough.
Oh, you sound like Anam's friend at therapy. It's not working. No, because it is it's intentional work. Like you have to make that reframe a reality. And that's why like the one-on-one coaching that I do half day or full day transformational packages, but my main recommended form of coaching is over 2 months. Because, great, I can give you the tools. We can dig deep and find out the limiting beliefs holding you back. And I can teach you ways to overcome that and reframe your mind. But long-term transformation, a lot of people like having a personal trainer. They need accountability. And that's why therapy has worked so well for so many years, because you get that outlet. But I think the difference, I mean, going off on a tangent here, but you know, like the difference between therapy and coaching is like therapy really digs into the why, like, you know, and gives you that mirror, that self-reflection. And whilst you do that in coaching, it's very much like, okay, this is why we've got to that. How do we move forward? How do we become this person that you want to be or that you envision yourself being? But yeah, okay, back to you guys. Now I'm just stealing the whole.
No, we love this. Yeah.
Just a quick question. How do you handle bad comments? Because I'm pretty sure that it happens. And for everyone who is thinking about their content, about, I don't know, to create Instagram channel or something like this, I guess it's the biggest fear, like that people will come and they will start commenting bad stuff about you. So did it happen to you? How did you feel about
this? Before you answer, I swear I think you're in my head, because I was literally like, I'm like, let me post this on YouTube and we get a bad comment, can I delete it?
So Jessica, tell us what to do.
I swear I was thinking about it just now. That's crazy.
Can I just say, I've been an entrepreneur for 3 months. I'm still figuring it out. No. Honestly, like what I say to myself is, because I have received a couple of bad comments on YouTube before, not related to my content, related to my face. I mean, just silly comments. I can't even remember what they said now. Something like, you know, when does plastic surgery get too much? I know. I was like looking back at my videos, overanalyze, like, I haven't had plastic surgery.
No, I'm not just going to look the same.
But initially, of course, anything bad hurts, right? Mm. Because especially if it's something that you haven't considered about yourself before, that's like, it shines a light on like something you didn't even know you had a problem with. But I came to the conclusion very quickly, that person is not my person.
Yeah.
Somebody that prides themselves on writing nasty things or being mean to people online, I don't want anything to do with a person like that. So I can very easily pray for them and let them go on with their life and hope that they realize that this is not a fulfilling way to live. But for me, like, that's it. Like, I one thought and I let them go. Like, so who cares? Because I have so many other people that I'm helping, and that's my purpose, to help people. I anchor myself in that. And I have a WhatsApp chat with myself where I share all the good feedback that I get about how I'm helping people show up better in life and live in a happier, more meaningful way. And so if, for example, that happened and I couldn't get past it with, so that's not my person, if it was something just like really, really bad and it was stuck, I would go to my WhatsApp chat, I would relook at that and be like, okay, this is why I do what I do, you know, and anchor myself there.
Yeah, there's a different kind of resilience you need to handle that as well.
I still don't know how we will handle it.
I think we'll be fine. I feel like at some point a lot of, especially social media personalities, they go through so much hate, and then you become so like, I don't know, immune to it, because you know that's irrelevant to your life. And like, if you believe the work you're doing is good, then there's nothing to be ashamed of. If they comment on your physical appearance, okay, then we'll just, you're here for me, I'm here for you, we'll just bat each other's back.
We'll go and do another surgery.
Hold our hands and let it read comments, that's it.
That is a nice thing that you guys are working together, but you know what, like, I would, in that situation, if it ever occurs, which I hope it really doesn't, but there are people out there, there are little nasty people out there, I would sit and say, is this true or is it subjective? So if someone said to me, you're ugly, for example, I would look at it and say, is it true or is it subjective? Like, do other people find me beautiful? I know my dogs find me very beautiful. I know my husband does, you know. I don't need everyone to find me beautiful. My mom finds me beautiful. People that I care about find me beautiful as a person, inside and outside. So is it true or is it subjective? And if it's subjective, let it go, because there are going to be other people out there that look at you and think like, wow, she's smoking hot, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And it's also the things they don't see beyond the content, right?
Yeah.
It's who you are and what you bring to people around you and what you do rest of the day.
Exactly.
So you know how I mentioned the prison inside me and then the cleaning house? The cleaning house was actually founded by Marina Abramovic, and like I mentioned before, that one is pretty intense in the sense where you have like blindfolds on and you're like sitting outside and you have to be invited to one of those retreats. Have you ever felt like, or have you been through that process before, like fully going social and public? Did you go through that process? Because I know you were off Instagram for a bit.
Yeah,
I noticed that. Yes. And when you came back and I'm like, damn, she's back. that something, I feel like you mimic sort of that, or the Nepal experience that you had. Yeah. I feel like, were you mimicking that, where you completely shut yourself out of like socials?
Yeah, kind of.
Because you also got married during that period, sorry.
Yeah.
So, maybe you're enjoying married life and you're like, you know, wait, also I need some time to create my content and like just get my structure in place.
No, it was connecting with myself.
Okay, fantastic.
Right?
Yeah.
Because everything is filled up. You can be busy if you want to be busy, but busy isn't good. You know, like creating space. And so when I was doing that, it's like an audit of where I spend my time. And a lot of that was going on social media. Even though I wasn't posting regularly, you know, I would post if I went on holiday or, you know, special occasions. But I said, am I gaining anything from this right now? And I wasn't. It's different when you're doing it as a business or when you just find joy in creating on your personal profile and that's something that brings you happiness. Great. But for me back then, I was so unhappy because I felt stuck and I didn't have clarity on that. So what I needed at that time was to create space. And I mean, you know, within the 10 months that I was off social, you almost forget that it exists. It's so refreshing.
Yeah, I've done that before. It really, really helped. I like that you said that busy is not good, because I make a conscious effort when somebody goes like, what are you up to? And saying busy was such a common thing to say, because then you affirm that I'm just busy. What are you doing, busy, mindless things? Like, I don't want to do that. And I think the big part of why we started this is because a lot of things in life are not really taught to us, right? Yeah. And one of them is rest. And rest is considered not productive enough when you're resting. Yeah. There's so many studies now showing that women need longer than 7 to 8 hours. We've been told that you need to at least sleep 7 to 8 hours. Mm. And now we're being told that you need to sleep more than 8 hours. Get your right rest. And then you will find productivity at your optimal. We're wearing watches. We're wearing fitness rings. We're doing all kinds of analysis. We're taking massive, expensive retreats.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about that. Rest is such a misunderstood word. How did you learn to see it as productive?
Through failure. Right? Like, I would honestly look back on my corporate years, and I was sick so frequently, either with a little cold or a full-blown flu or a headache or a migraine. Acid reflux, you know, I'm not saying like sick to the point of having to be off work, but I just felt constantly unwell.
Yeah.
And I convinced myself that there was a problem with my immune system, you know, and because I was eating right, I was working out, I was pushing through. That's what I was doing. I was just, staying busy, like you said. So I think through failing to rest, when I saw the signs and signals that I needed to rest, I would get sick, and then I was forced to rest. You know, when you're sick to the point where like you have to take a day or two out.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, you feel better and you get right back on and do the exact same thing all over again. But for me, there was this one time, it was about 7 years ago. So 2 weeks, I was so ill with a migraine, and to be off work for 2 weeks with a migraine, like, you just don't hear of people taking time out of work, right, for a migraine. So week one went by, and instead of taking the time off, I was logging on, I was doing what I could, but it got so intense that I was vomiting, my vision started to go blurry. Gosh. But again, not listening to the signs and symptoms of what was burnout at the time, I pushed through. Went to the hospital 3 times. First 2 times, it's a migraine, take this stronger painkiller. On the 3rd time, I'd collapsed, and I woke up with my mum in the hospital with me. She flew from England, and I'm like, what is happening? I'd had meningitis.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
Yeah, and I nearly died. I was in the hospital quarantined for 6 weeks, and only now I look back and I'm like, if I'd have just taken the initial signs, the doctor said to me, somebody of your age doesn't just get meningitis this bad and, you know, get to this position. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you do for a living? Like, I work in sales, work in media. No, but honestly, like, I just got to a point where, I nearly killed myself through ignoring these signs and symptoms. And so then moving forward, I just honored, like, I would check in with myself. If I felt unwell, I would take a day off. If I couldn't afford to take a day off, I would take half a day off. Mm-hmm. I would, rather than going on holiday, I would sit at home or do something with my husband, you know? So, I reckon, like, with rest, you've just got to learn. You don't have to learn the hard way, but look back. What I would say is look back on every time when you were bedbound and you couldn't work, and see if there were any signs and symptoms leading up to it. And I guarantee 9 times out of 10, there will have been. People would have just ignored them. And when they see that pattern in their own life, that's an opportunity to be like, okay. Mm-hmm. So when I see them again moving forward, let me just take the break.
Yeah, no, I completely forgot about that time, Jess. Yeah, it was a difficult one. Yeah. I suppose that's when you started embracing slowing down as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And I think I'm sure like the definition of success also changed and everything changed.
Yeah.
Do you think, I mean, we're going to transition in a bit and Sanya will carry on with that, is that do you think corporate world can truly embrace kindness and wellness, or does it, or something needs to change in that on a deeper level?
Yeah, I mean, they can, but it's not just like, you know, a yoga Wednesday or a weekly lunch or a fruit bowl.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's, you know, because these companies, these corporate environments that are priding themselves on wellness, like a lot of them are introducing these things, which are great, but it's systemic, you know, like from the ground up. People need to set boundaries at any level. If they feel like they need a break or their workload is too much, it is on them to raise that with their manager, no matter how uncomfortable that may be or how scary that may be. But at least they can say, oh, I've done everything I can possibly do to help make my life better, you know?
Yeah.
And then from a leadership perspective, like back to the empathy, empathy-led leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think, I mean, look, you can't meditate your way out of a toxic environment. Mm-hmm. So if you try those things, if you try communicating with your manager, if you try setting boundaries, if you try talking to leadership about more empathy or wellness or whatever it may be, and none of that works, then you're left with a decision.
Mm-hmm.
Do I stay in this toxic environment that isn't serving me, or do I go and find something else?
That's true.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
I think that just a couple of last questions to wrap up our conversation and to give some practical advice. So I like this idea. The friend of mine told me that what you do every day, even if you do it only for 10 days, defines you.
Yeah.
So for example, I don't know, if you are doing yoga for 10 days, it defines you. If you do something else, but so it's about what you do regularly.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you about your rituals. So what do you do like every day or maybe not every other day?
Yeah, so my rituals. Okay, so I am an entrepreneur for 3 months. So I am trying and adapting and learning and growing all the time. So every week I analyze, like, okay, what worked, what didn't, and I'm always changing and tweaking what that looks like. But there are a few things that I don't compromise on. So I get up, I move my body, I go to the gym, I walk my dogs, I come back and get ready, have breakfast, and then I start my day. Also, I always have 2 hours off in the afternoon.
Oh, gross.
Not
sure that I have them on the weekend.
No, but you know what? The funny thing is, this one started back when I was in corporate.
Mm-hmm.
My boss, old boss, he knew I used to wake up at 4 or 5 a.m. Like, I'm just a morning person. Mm-hmm. I go to bed very early. So with me waking up at that time, by lunchtime, I would be exhausted. So I had an agreement with my boss where I would take an hour and a half, 2 hours out in the afternoon, but he knew I would always make up for it.
Absolutely,
you know, I mean, probably more than I should have back then working into the evening. But so, 2 hours off in the afternoon. And those 2 hours, they look like doing whatever I want. I'll have a nap, I'll watch a show, I'll sit and have lunch with my husband, I'll play with my dogs, I'll go for a walk, I will, you know, literally anything that I want to do, I do in those 2 hours. And that refuels me and energizes me so much for the second half of the day. And then in the evening, that thought download that I told you guys about, so 30 minutes, close my eyes, let my mind, without judgment, just go from, you know, what's my life about to what do I need to buy tomorrow? You know, I just let it be free without judgment. And then I meditate for 10 minutes and I say to myself, right, because I used to struggle with getting to sleep because I'd have so many thoughts in my head. So after doing this, the thought download, then the meditation, then I literally say to myself, right, now you can sleep. And I do. So it's so powerful. So yeah, they are my little rituals, if you like. But it, like, you know, you were saying earlier, like, it looks different for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you going out and doing your dancing, or, you know, you going to your events or whatever it may be. It's like, yeah, just find your flow. And if it doesn't work one week, try something else. And eventually you can just like cherry pick what works and then, yeah, live it.
I like the word thought down there. Maybe this is the title of the... in like three words, if you can tell someone today who's feeling stuck, what step they can take to get a little unstuck or feel a little less overwhelmed.
Yes.
Just three words.
I would say, honestly, like just close your eyes, put your hand on your heart and just ask yourself, what do I need right now? And 9 times out of 10, you will find the answer. If it doesn't come straight away, you keep repeating, what do I need right now? Because the first answer may be, I don't know, or, I need some time off work. Yeah. And then you can dig deeper and say, okay, what does time off work look like? Like, how are you going to feel better with that time off work? Do you want to go on holiday? Do you want to spend it with loved ones? And keep digging until you find the answers, but ask yourself the right question.
Mm.
Yeah.
Very important. Well, the last question, which is the main character of the story. Mm-hmm. We always say this wasn't in the manual. Every time we all have such individual experiences. So if you could add just one page into life's manual, what would it say?
Oh, let's go back to busy. Busy, busy isn't a badge of honor, you know, and we all do it. I am guilty as charged of doing this, like my entire career. Oh, I'm busy, you know, it makes you feel good, but it's not right. So number one is busy isn't a badge of honor. Then I'd say rest isn't a reward. Rest is necessary to thrive, to feel good, to be happy, and to live a fulfilling life. And also success. Success isn't about money. We all chase money or a promotion and, you know, awards or external validation, whatever that looks like. And for some people, it might be part of success, you know. Of course, money makes a difference. But beyond that, it's like, defining what success is to you as an individual is so important.
Right.
Like, sit down with yourself today and map out, what do I value? How do I enjoy spending my time? Dancing, meditating, creating, learning, whatever it may be. And define your version of success. Make more time for it.
Mm-hmm.
And you will feel successful.
Yeah. Amazing. Fantastic. Yes. Honestly, this is one question that I want to plug into our every episode is with anyone that I meet. I feel like as such an expat country, you know, we're all, hustle is such a, sometimes it triggers me, but like people that are doing their main job, then they're doing their side jobs. Technically, Kindness Project was your side hustle, if you think about it, but now it's your main thing. But I also think while you're pursuing this inner peace, just like calmness and just really looking after yourself, I think it's so important for you to also ensure that you are future-proof. And unfortunately, that comes with money.
Yes.
Do you now look at, now that you have a business and there are a lot of ups and downs, do you now look at investing money? Do you save money? How do you make sure that, because when you don't have the money, it's hard to find that stress, that relief as well.
Yeah.
Because no matter how much meditation I'll do, if I'm getting kicked out of my house, then like, it's not going to help, you know? So I'd love to know, like, how do you now as a business owner look at reinvesting your finances to ensure that, you know, you're future-proof if tomorrow or next month the business doesn't come through? How do you, like, keep that going?
So investments, well, I believe a lot in real estate, and I'm not going to sit here and preach like I know everything
about it. No, it's fine. That's your experience and what's worked for you. Yes. So I'd love to know.
So I invested in property, and it started out as, you know, a small one-bedroom apartment in Dubai.
Mm-hmm.
Sold that and then bought a three-bedroom apartment in Dubai. So a conservative investment that then, based on the profit of that, I upgraded.
Mm-hmm.
And that was great. equally, it comes with a big mortgage, right? Mm-hmm. So you can look at that as a smart long-term investment. But what that meant is when I was stepping back to create the Kindness Catalog, that runway, that fund that I needed to be so much bigger than somebody that didn't have that investment, mm-hmm. because of course they need to cover the mortgage. Equally, am I somewhat using that to be future-proof? Yes, because if anything ever went wrong, then I have my property that I could sell. But I've given myself, a year's runway, starting from the 1st of January to the end of the year. I mean, you know, I told you I'm making as much as I was making in my full-time gig. Could it be? Yeah, but is it sustainable? Like you say, anything could happen. Yeah. That's for sure. So I'm prepared for that. But I think the cool thing is, as a business owner, you just become so much more conscious mm-hmm. of how you spend. Like, I didn't realize... I mean, I've always been very frugal, I think, with money. You know, like, I'm the type of person, I'll heat my cup of coffee like 3 times before throwing it away.
Yeah.
You know, my husband my husband is like, just make a new coffee. What's wrong with you? It's like too dear. But it's I don't waste. I can't.
Yeah.
I was raised in a very, very conservative household. Like, we didn't have a lot. So anything that I do have, I really appreciate. I really make the most of it. But... yeah, just save, and the long-term fulfillment will just outdo like any money that you could have in return, like tenfold.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. And so awesome.
Thank you so much, Jessica. I think that your journey is a great reminder for all of us that the rest is actually... it's not just a reward, but it's a part of the process. And if right now you're listening to this podcast and want to explore more, so follow Jessica on Instagram at The Kindness Catalog for beautiful content that might help you to reconnect yourself.
And if you enjoyed this conversation, make sure to follow This Wasn't in the Manual wherever you get your podcasts and your social media. We've got more real unfiltered chats coming your way about the stuff no one ever teaches us, but we all have to figure it out. That's